Following is an interview by Patrick Huber with Jimmy Gross at his home in Hillsboro, North Carolina on November 22, 1994. The following interview is being conducted for the Southern Oral History Program and is part of its Oral History of the White Furniture Company. I thought we might start out today, Jimmy, by having you tell us where and when you were born and about what your folks did for a living.
I was born in Southwest Virginia, Richlands, Virginia. My father, he worked in the coal mines. Different places like that, working around coal mines, mostly what I've done and everything. And, I was born 15th of June, this is 1963. And, I had my father, he worked around coal mines, working in temples, and my brother, he does the same thing. He works where my father retired from. He works there now, my brother does.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I got six sisters and one brother. Well, two brothers, one of my brothers, he died when he was about 9 weeks old or something mm-hmm. like that.
So, did you work around, did you work in the coal mine?
No, I never did. Once I got out of high school uh-huh. and everything, I moved down here. Because I heard that there's plenty of work here in North Carolina and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, once I got down here, I started working construction, building houses and stuff like that, until I started working at White's.
How was it that that you got your job at White's?
I just heard it was a pretty good place to work for and everything.
Uh-huh.
There's plenty of work. They give you, pretty good pay and everything like that. I went there, I think I started in 78 when I started.
Uh-huh.
And they started me out there working on the rubbing pack line, sanding drawers for dressers and stuff like that. That's what I started out as. And then I went to working on the main line, running air sanders, and using the wet oil, after it was sprayed, to sand them down with and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Went from there, I just worked my way up the line doing different things, wet sanding by hand, running the machines, and sanding tabletops. And then I started running a buffing machine, putting compound on the furniture and stuff. Just worked my way on up to the platform, boxing up the furniture, putting glass in the chinas, and putting hardware on, I done just, mm-hmm. just about everything. I'd work in the warehouse and stuff like that sometimes too. Just whatever they really need to be done,
mm-hmm.
Some people didn't show up or something like that, they might have to go back down on the line and do certain things for them.
Did you know somebody working at White's whenever you got your job there?
No. I knew a few of the people,
mm-hmm.
Just running around town, talking to people and stuff. And I just got, just meet them and they'd get to talking to them and they'd tell me where they worked at. And, say, tell me if they worked at White's, that's, a good place to work for and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I just went there and put in my application and talked to Lewis Crabbit. He was the one over the finish room then. And talked to him, he hired me on, started from there. Like I said, he started me out sanding the drawers and stuff like that, and I just worked my way on up the line. I worked in the finishing room there for 2.5 years, 3 years, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I got tired of busting my butt, not getting no pay for it. Mm-hmm. I worked hard. That's the way I've always been. Mom and Dad always taught me, you know, if you work hard, you're going to get places. But it seemed like to me that didn't happen there, you know. I wasn't making the money that I thought I should make for the work, you know, I was putting out for me. Mm-hmm.
Do you mind my asking what your starting salary was there when you?
I think they started me out at $5.50 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And, when they shut down the Hillsborough plant, I think I wasn't making about $7 an hour.
Mm-hmm. And how long had you been there from time that you started?
2.5-3 years. Yeah, but I mean, still that was pretty good. Pretty uh-huh. good pay for just be there that long, you know, I guess. I think I was making about right at $7 an hour or something like that. But, like I said, I wasn't pleased with the pay, so I got Glenn Farabee. He was the plant manager. He transferred me up to the machine room.
Uh-huh.
And I worked up there probably two more years in the machine room before they closed the plant. But they kept me at the rate of pay up they was giving me, which was about $7 an hour, until I think put me on like a 90-day probation period after mm-hmm. after I went up to the machine room. And then they put me up like $7.86 or something like that an hour. After I'd been there like 60 or 90 days up there, they put me to running the edge sander and worked the hand shaping chair legs and working on a bandsaw and router, gluing up stock and all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Different, you know, just the same thing more or less, you know, just running machines.
Was that easier work up in the machine room?
Not necessarily easier, just, you know, I enjoyed it more, mm-hmm. running the machines.
Did you have to bust your butt as much?
Not quite as hard.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's a totally different thing from what I was doing the first time, you know. I liked it up there in the machine room. Well, I liked it in the finishing room, but I just couldn't get along with some of the supervisors in the finishing room. That's the reason I transferred out, get away from men.
Would they ride you?
Just ride your butt, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the way they had that furniture coming down the line, you didn't have no time to even get your breath. And quick as you did one piece, you'd have to turn around and do another.
Uh-huh.
And that line constantly running. And, I mean, they just worried about putting the furniture out, more or less, not what it looked like.
Hmm.
Back then, anyway. They was wanting the quantity, not the quality. They kept preaching quality, but it didn't seem to very much matter, you know. I mean, the furniture still looked good, but a lot of it come back about the finish peeling off of it and stuff. See, what it was, they'd run it through them ovens too fast and not give it time to cure, for the finish to cure right on
mm-hmm.
it. And that's the reason a lot of it come back.
When you say it would come back, would customers who bought it
yeah.
send it back?
Right. So they shipped a lot of their stuff to California and New York and places like that, and which the money they was charging for the stuff, wouldn't you? If you paid like $2,000, $2,500 for a dresser, one piece, wouldn't you send it back if it started peeling? So that's what they did. One lady, I think she was from New York, sent us a video.
Huh.
And showed us what all was wrong with the furniture. She sent back 3 pieces, I think.
Uh-huh.
And she paid for the shipping and handling to send it back and everything, and they just sent her a whole new suit. But the drawers was messed up on it. You go to pull the drawers out of it, they'd stick. And then when you go to push it back in, the drawer would drop, wobble and stuff, you know, just simple little things like that. And didn't like the way it was scratched up and stuff like that, you know.
What would the supervisor say when this stuff came back in, or when the video?
Well, he the plant supervisors, you know, made us, all of us, the whole plant, sit down there and watch it.
At one time?
Yeah. And he's still preaching quality. But still, when you get in there and doing your job, the only thing they wanted was quantity, you know.
Did any of the workers say something to that effect to him?
If you got to grouching about it or whatever, they didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
The way they looked at it, you was there just to do that job, and they didn't want to hear no bullshit from you. So you keep your mouth shut or you go out the door.
Hmm. This was all under Hickory.
Yeah.
After Hickory.
But yeah.
You never worked there when Whites owned it?
No. It was still called White's Furniture. The Hillsboro plant was when I started.
Mm-hmm.
But Hickory had owned it for probably a year or two after I started there. Which, in my opinion, they had plans to shut down the Mebane plant and the Hillsboro plant all along.
Mm-hmm.
They just, because they got 5 or 6 other plants in other states and stuff.
You think they bought it with that those intentions?
Yeah, they just wanted to make it quick, man. That's the reason they didn't care about what the furniture looked like, because they knew they was going to shut the place down. And after it shut down, they ain't got no place to send the furniture back to.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just stuck with the furniture. Which, that ain't no way to run no business. I mean, I understand they wanted to make the money if they wanted to keep making that money, but they didn't want to keep making it. They just wanted to make it for 2 or 3 years, you know. Which, well, I worked for Hillsboro plants probably 4 or 5 years altogether. And I worked for Mebane plant probably a year, year and a half. Before they shut it down. But still, it's Mebane plant's about the same way. They didn't. When I first started there, I thought it was a difference in it, but it wouldn't. They didn't care about the quality. They just wanted quantity. It's the same thing, you know. If you didn't make a certain production on the stuff, they would grouch about it, you know, raise hell on you. They wanted a certain amount of ones, like dressers or chests. They want, you know, like 200 or 300 or 400 of them a day.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be all you could do to put them out, you know. Like Chinas or something like that, they'd have to have 150 of them a day. Which, on China cabinets, you got to glass them out, put molding on them, all kinds of stuff, man. It takes a long time to do just one. Takes you probably 30 minutes a piece or something like that to do one in China.
Mm-hmm.
They made you work for what little bit they did pay you. To me, they should have been paying you $9 or $10 an hour instead of that little 6 or 7, you know, for as hard as you worked.
You were a pretty young worker there and had just come in from the outside, hadn't been there for very long, but how did some of the old timers who had been there for like 20, 30 years, who had always done it like the Whites way, where they didn't push them to get that production out? That's what other people have told me. How did they kind of react to?
Well, they said that the ones that I talked to, the older men and stuff, said that it was a good place until Hickory took over
mm-hmm.
to work for, because they would pay you for production and had that, profit sharing and stuff like that, you know, where you had another thing where you can invest money back into the company if you wanted to,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. No, they give you good bonuses, like on Christmas and stuff, like you've been there a year or two or stuff like that, they give you $500 bonuses.
Hmm.
Plus, your weekly check,
mm-hmm.
you know, that means a lot, getting good bonuses like that. Give you the incentive to do good work for them. But when I started there, you got 2 paydays, but you worked for them 2 paydays on, for Christmas and stuff. They'd make you put out double what needed to be put out,
uh-huh.
before you went on vacation.
What would Hickory give you for, they didn't give you bonuses at Christmas time?
No, I just give you cost of living raise, and you get your 2 paychecks.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be it. You get the cost of living raise, which I think back then was only like 4% of what you made in a year. They give you that one time a year. which I didn't, you know, didn't amount to really be anything. But some weeks you'd work 15, 60 hours a week, going, you know, what all had to be put out, mm-hmm. how much they needed of it put out and everything like it.
Other people I've talked to have told me that they would pull bad pieces off the line, bad parts, and then at the end of the day, if they didn't have enough parts to make a finished dresser, they would use these bad parts. And yeah. Had you seen any of that?
Yeah, we used to have to take them apart like that up on the platform when I worked in the finishing room. Take parts off one or two. And have one that was halfway good, mm-hmm. take, you know, part of the parts off of one and make one, you know. Let's say you have two bad cases or whatever, you take parts off in two bad cases and put them on another case.
What'd you think about that?
I didn't think it was right. I mean, you try to use the best parts you could, but if you didn't have, like you said, if you didn't have enough parts to finish out, they use a bad part. Mm-hmm. They just cover it up with some kind of, like, they call it burning in. All it is a wax, like, deal. And they just burn it, like, big scratches and stuff in it. They take it wax and just burn it into it and color it. Have different colored wax and stuff. And it come right out. After, you know, if it ever got wet or anything like it, it just come right off. And that's what was wrong with the finish. If it ever got damp or started drawing moisture, the finish would peel right off of it. I've seen them come in there and the whole tops of the dresses be peeled off. Then they just sand them down, and refinish them, and then send them back out again to be resold. Like, you know, sell them as new furniture.
Mm-hmm. Or the supervisors telling workers to...
Yeah, they tell you to do it. I mean, they didn't throw nothing away. If anything... went out of there, it went to some of the supervisors, and they would take it and sell it to other people, you know. Mm-hmm. I've seen them carry out truckloads of furniture out of there, taking it to one of the supervisors' house. Which I ain't going to name no names on that, but it happened too many times. I've seen them take it out of there in the back of pickup trucks. He probably paid, you know, a little bit further for the furniture. They wouldn't give it to him or nothing, but you know, he paying just a dime compared to damn $2,000 or $3,000, you know, what it usually costs.
Because it was slightly damaged?
Yeah. Is it? And they do the work on them, fix them up, they're getting paid for it. And then they would take them home with them, you know. Mm. Put them in the back of the trucks at lunchtime, take them home, come back to work. The company was paying them to fix furniture that they was going to make money on. Mm-hmm. So,
When the Hillsboro plant shut down, you got transferred to White's?
Yeah, in Mebane.
In Mebane?
Yeah, I helped them tear out all the stuff, move all the machines out of the Hillsboro plant. Stripped everything out of it. All the machines, all the duct work. Had to take everything out of the finishing room. Me and Carlton Lane's the one that hired me, you know, to help him do that. Got me to stay there. Hillsboro plant. Once I done that, they sent me to the Mebane plant. It took us probably 3 or 4 months, I guess, to tear out everything out of Hillsboro plant. Then they got transferred me down to Mebane plant, put me in the sanding room down there. Ed sanding, let me mold sand, all kinds of stuff. Just still same thing, just everywhere they needed you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'd go up in the rubbing pack, help them box up furniture, you know, even though I was supposed to be in a sanding room working. If I didn't have work for them to do, they'd put me up there in rubbing pack work.
Did all the workers at the Hillsboro plant get transferred to Mebane?
Most of them, yeah. Some of them decided they didn't want to go to Mebane. Mm-hmm. Some of them had to already work there and stuff like it and didn't like it at Mebane. And So they either quit and found them other jobs, or they went down there. You know, some of them stayed for a while, and then they'd quit and found another job somewhere else once they got to MIB. Quite a few of the older workers had already worked for the MIB plant. They didn't like it down there, so they got transferred, you know, to Hillsborough plant. Once they closed it down, they didn't have much of a choice, you know, either find them another job or go to the Mevin plant. Which Robin Hart, he ran the place for the longest time. As far as I've ever heard, he's one, you know, was running. He was like a pain in the butt. He'd watch over you like a hawk. He didn't like the way you do. He'd come and grouch at you and everything. Bitch at you, whatever. Which to me, there wasn't no use in all the bitching, you know, riding people's ass like it. Didn't make no sense. Which, like I said, they weren't really worried about what the furniture looked like anyway. Which everybody's doing the best they could do. If they had put money into the plant, got better machines and stuff like that, it'd been easier to do the work and make, you know, get better quality out of the furniture. But they wasn't about to invest some money in something they had plans to close down anyway.
Did you like it at Mebane better? Hillsborough or?
I liked Hillsborough plant better.
Did you?
Because, you know, I knew all the people, everything. Like I said, I worked with the people. I knew just about everybody in the whole Hillsborough plant. And, which a lot of them from the Hillsborough plant went to Mebane. But they was all working in different departments, you know. All the people that was in the Sandy Reuben, the Mebane, I didn't hardly know any of them, but I got to know them. Some of them work down at Craftique now, where I work now. Seems like everybody's following each other.
How many people were in the Sandy department when you went to Mebane?
Probably 15, 20 people in the sand room.
Mostly men, or?
Yeah.
Were there some women?
It was one or two women. Most of them was men. They just had the women's, like, hand sanding, you know, the small parts. Like, where they'd have, where they'd be routed out and it'd be rough inside the grooves and stuff. They'd have them sanding and gluing up, putting dowels in them and stuff like that. It's most of what the women did. But, you know, I'd get them to help them on certain machines here and there when they needed them to. They just put you wherever they needed you. If you didn't do a good job, they wouldn't let you go back and do that job again, you know. Which a lot of people, they didn't want to try to do different things. They just wanted to do one job. And that's the reason a lot of them didn't make money. If you got out there and done the best you could do and, you know, go for whatever job they wanted you to go on and do the best you could on it, they'd, you know, send you back to do it most of the time, do the same job. I liked it like that. I didn't want to be on one job all the time doing the same old thing. I'd rather be doing something different every day, you know, or every other day. Which at times you'd be doing the same thing for a week or 2 weeks at a time. And then they pull you off that and you go do something else somewhere else in the plant. I've even helped them on maintenance and stuff like that.
Would Robin Hart, would he walk through the plant? Or did people not see him very much?
You'd see him just about every day, but like I said, he was always a butthole. He'd trying to, I don't know, he'd stand there and watch you, sometimes not say nothing, then other times walk up to you. You ain't doing that job right. Even though you've been doing it for the past year, you ain't doing it right.
You've had that happen to you?
Yeah. Jim Murray, he was he was the plant supervisor, I think. A personnel supervisor down there in Mebane. He was a good fella. He tried to treat everybody right. but you know, he didn't really have no authority, but he, you know, he'd give you, try to give you good raises and stuff, you know, when your time comes, get a raise and stuff. They always went on how many days of work you missed and stuff like that. They give you a raise every 6 months, something like that. But most time it's at least, you know, anywhere from a quarter to 50-cent raise every 6 months. And Glenn Farabee, he was the plant supervisor for a Hillsborough plant. What I understood, he was a he worked in Mebane too before he became plant supervisor in Hillsborough. He couldn't get along with some of the people down in Mebane, so once they shut down the Hillsborough plant, they didn't want him in Mebane, so they just give him the beat. He's running some furniture plant now down there, Saxbaha or someplace down there now. But he was just like Robin Hard. He'd ride your ass over any kind of this little thing. That's what they wanted. They wanted the supervisors to ride everybody's ass. You know, keep them in, try to keep them in line. Kind of like being in prison, but you're getting paid for it in a lot of ways. Like working on a chain gang.
What sort of things would you, what sort of things would you do counteract somebody coming in and riding your ass? How would you react to that?
Wasn't much you could do. You just had to shake it off. And you just either walk away from them, try to get out of their face, or something, you know. Just go hide from them. Nothing else. Then go back and do your job the way you're supposed to do. I'd get so mad sometimes, about ready to explode. I just go clock out and go home sometimes. I get so mad. I get that mad, I just go to my supervisor and say, look, I'm going home. You say, what's wrong with you? I'm sick. I'd lie to him. There'd be nothing wrong with him, but I just mad I couldn't stand to stay there. I just clock out and go to the house.
How many times did you do that, would you say?
I've done a bunch of times at the Hillsborough plant. But because I worked every day and stuff like that, they let certain little things slide, you know, like that on you. I don't know how many times, really. Probably at the Hillsborough plant, I've probably done it three or four times, five times, in probably 3 or 4 years that I was there. I think I done it once or twice. It may have been. And I got fired once because of it. Got fired.
Because you did that?
See, I told him I was going to go home. What it was, it was the day before my birthday. It was a Friday. My birthday was Saturday. And I was wanting to get off half day Friday. And he wouldn't let me off. So I said, told him the day before that I wanted off. He said he'd see what he could do. And when I went and told him that I was going to leave, he said, you go home, you're fired. I thought he was just kidding. Because me and him was pretty good friends, but he was a supervisor, you know, which he lived here and everything then, the same house right here. And
he was living?
He was living here, yeah. I was living across from the Hillsborough plant then. And went in Monday morning, went in there and went back to work. And he come in there, I need to talk to you a minute. Took me in the break room. He said, I fired you Friday. I said, what? He said, I fired you. I didn't cuss him out or nothing. I just got all red in the face, got mad, you know. He said, all right, I'll see you around. Walked on out the door. Stayed gone almost a year, I think it was. Then they sent word for me to come back down there and go, if I wanted a job back. They do some crazy stuff. Did or whatever.
So you just stayed out of work for a year, huh?
Nah, I went back doing construction work and stuff like that then. Well, done some construction work, and then I went to work. I think I was working out there building massage tables out here in the business center out here. I've been working there 7 or 8 months, and they sent word for me to come back down there if I wanted a job back, the pay that I was getting, which is almost $8 an hour, which I wasn't making about $6.50 or something out there. Mm-hmm. The reason I went back down there is because of the pay. And that was probably a year before they closed the Mebane plant.
Why do you think they gave you a job back?
Just because I worked hard and everything.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'd work every day. Probably might miss 1 or 2 days a year. You know, a lot of people miss 20 or 30 days a year.
Huh.
Just the fact that, you know, I didn't hardly miss no days. And I'd done a good job and everything for them. And I'd bust my butt. Which all the people, I knew all the people, knew a lot of the supervisors. You know, it's, most of them is pretty good people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got your buttholes in the crowd. That's just the way it is.
Did anybody, any workers ever take a swing at a supervisor or something like that?
I've heard rumors of, like, mostly it's like this, white supervisors ride the black's butts.
Mm-hmm.
And one time, black guy went to his head, whooped the far out of him from what I understood, you know, busted his nose and everything.
Right there in the job, huh?
And they fired him.
Huh.
Kept the supervisor and fired him. Now that wasn't right. Which he egged it on, calling him a nigger and stuff.
Huh.
You know, and he was standing there trying to do a job, and the white supervisor saying, "Get your ass and get your nigger." Hmm. He got the door or something like that, and he turned around and he knocked the hell out of it.
This was at Mebane?
Yeah.
Recently? Like in the late 80s when you were there?
Let's see, this is... It was probably 6 months before the plant closed or something.
Hmm.
6 months or a year before the plant closed. Hey. They do stupid stuff like it. Robin Hart, he was the plant supervisor. I mean, I guess that's what you call him, plant supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
He got cancer. All the hell that he'd give raise on everybody that's coming back to him. Well, yeah, I see it.
How'd you find out that he had, how'd you find that out?
Carlton told me about it.
Huh. Where's he at now, do you know?
Nah, I don't know what Robin's doing.
So the workers didn't think much of him, huh?
No. Nobody liked him. Just because he tried to push everybody around. He let his authority get to his head. He didn't try to treat you like a person. He tried to treat you like a dog.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody to kick around. Act like he got his thrills out of it doing that or something, you know.
How old of a guy was he?
He's probably, I'd say he's about 55 or 60 now, something mm-hmm. like that. He was probably about 53 or something like that then. 55. He might have been older. I'm not sure how old he was.
Who were you closest to there at the Mebane plant? Who were your closest friends?
Well, her niece, she worked there too, Tammy Shortridge. And me and her always rode to work together and everything.
Mm-hmm.
We worked together, but that's how she got a job at the Hillsborough plant, was through me. Supervisor come and ask me, you know, about her, what all kind of person she was and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he hired her the next day and everything. Put her to work.
Hmm. Did you all come down here together?
Yeah, all of us. So, me and her and her niece's husband and her little boy.
Uh-huh.
We all come down here about the same time. That was about probably 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Something like it.
You just heard that there were jobs down?
Yeah.
In this part of the country?
Yeah. Heard there's plenty of work and everything. We come down here. I had been down here a couple times before, but mostly just working construction. That's when I started there at Weiss. That's on a company that I had ever worked for before.
Did construction not pay as well?
No. When it rained and stuff like that, you'd be knocked out of work.
Mm-hmm.
Just seasonal work is really what it was. When it's good and hot and stuff, you can make good money.
Mm-hmm.
You put in plenty of hours, stuff like that. If it rained or snowed and stuff like that, you couldn't get no hours in. Some weeks you'd make a good payday, some weeks you wouldn't. Some weeks you wouldn't make nothing. So I got tired of that, and that's the reason I started working at this furniture factory, because the fact, you know, you at least get you 40 hours a week or more.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other close friends there at the plant that you'd hang out with after work?
I had a lot of friends down there, but, you know, not just them. Just with Teresa, my wife, she worked there. And Tammy Shortridge and her husband, Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only family that we ever had, you know, we had down here and everything. We was all one big family, more or less. Some of the Hillsboro workers and stuff like that, they'd come over and we'd drink a few beers and stuff like that together sometimes. Just hang out, maybe go to the bar or something like that every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Just run around a little bit together.
Did a lot of people who worked there do stuff outside of work with one another?
Yeah, I'd say they did. A lot of them, you know, like working on furniture for themselves and stuff. They mm-hmm. repair them and refinish them and stuff like that. Huh? Get over there. Which, that's what Carlton does. He builds cabinets and stuff like that. He built his whole kitchen set and everything in his house, which he's built a bunch of sets for other people.
What was your normal work day like? What time would you have to get up in the morning?
Yeah, I had to get up about 5:30, 6:00. Be to work at 7:00. Get off about 3:30, 4:00. Uh-huh. O'clock.
And you carpooled though with Tammy every.
Yeah. Rode every day, together and everything.
And then during the day, you'd get a break at?
So they'd give us a break about 9:30, and we'd get a lunch break at 12:00. We'd get another break about 2:00, a little bit after 2:00, something like that. And then we'd get home about 3:30, 4:00.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, is required by law to give you at least 2 breaks a day. Besides, you know, your lunch break, stuff like that.
What would people do on break?
Just sit in the break room, talk about, you know, anything, I guess. Anything and everything. Which, when you work with somebody 4 or 5 years, you become like they're part of your family, really. You get pretty close, you feel like you can talk to them about anything.
Mm-hmm.
discuss your problems with them, have an objective view about things that was bothering you. Somebody else, you know, give you your view, their view of what, how they felt their things should be or whatever. If you're having problems, you could discuss it with them. You wouldn't have to worry about, you know. That's the way it is. When you work with somebody like that for so long, you do become real close. Feel like you're in a family, but the company wasn't your family, just the people working for the company. You felt like you was family. You didn't give a shit about the company because the company didn't give a shit about you. That's what it boiled down to be. A lot of good people work for Watts, or worked for Watts. Some of them went to Hickory, I reckon. Don't know how many of us went down there.
Did they give people that option, or only certain people?
Yeah, if you wanted a job, but you'd had to move or either drive 2 hours, mm-hmm. you know, from Mebane or whatever, to get down there. Which, you know, a lot of people considered moving down there to Hickory around that area just so they could keep a job and stuff. Some of them, I guess, that went down there and everything, they're driving that 2.5 hours just to get go down and go to work, you know. Some of them went, some of them didn't.
You know anybody who went down there?
Not right offhand that I can think of. Mm-hmm. Most of them went to work. Most of the people, when they closed down the Mebane plant, they went to work like at Kraft Teague. What was the place that Carolyn worked?
Avery Smith.
Yeah, Avery Smith and places like that, and mattress companies and stuff down there in Mebane. There's different places right around the area, you know. They didn't want to have to drive at 2.5 hours just to go to work, so they had to get them a job somewhere else. Had no choice.
Do you still see people occasionally who work there?
Yeah.
Do you?
I've seen them at the flea market and stuff like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which, it's about the whole machine room down at Kraft Teague. It's all Mebane workers.
Uh-huh.
Ain't but about 2 or 3 of them down there work in the machine room. It's didn't work in Mebane. See, out of the whole plant, 3/4 of the workers are Mebane workers, finishing and ribbon pack and all. But some of the people down at Kraft Teague, they've been there like 10 or 15 or 20 years and they ain't making but $6 an hour. They don't want to pay you nothing, but you don't have to. It ain't like Watts, though.
How's that?
Just the fact you don't have to, they don't push you, you work at your own pace, do what you want to do, take your break when you want to take a break. It's a good place to work for, they just pay more money and everything.
How do the benefits compare to Whites?
Well, down there you got to work there 2 years before you get paid for vacation.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. What about the insurance?
You don't really have no kind of life insurance policy on you or anything like that.
None?
They got what they call a life insurance policy, but it really don't amount to nothing, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, of course, you don't get that. You don't get those kind of insurance at all down there until you've been there 6 months. When I work for Watts, after 60 or 90 days, they give you your insurance there. With that Kraft ticket, you got what things have changed so much, people come and go so much, you know, at the furniture factory, you know, quitting and everything. But from what I understood, that's the way all the factories are going to start doing. You won't have no benefits at all, so mm-hmm. you've been there at least 6 months. And like I said, you don't get paid for vacation or nothing like that until you've been there 2 years.
When were there rumors going around the plant that in Mebane that it's going to close?
The day that they told us, they called us. Well, they told us that we was going to have a meeting for everybody to go to the. Go down to the where they stored the furniture and everything, because it was a bigger area and everything. They sent the whole plant down there. I knew right there that they were going to close it, because it seemed like to me that's the same way they done Hillsboro plant, you know.
Oh, uh-huh.
And, I just had a funny feeling that they were going to close, and that's what I told the supervisor. I said, they're closing the plant, ain't they? And he said, no, I don't know. Like, yeah, I ain't got no authority to say anything, is what he told me. And when he said that, I knew they was going to close. And I started telling everybody, I said, look, they're going to shut the plant. Sure enough, there was the main, Richard Hinkle, I think. Was it Hinkle or something like that? Anyway, he was the main one over Hickory. He came down there and started talking to us. He said, we got to close the plant. Not making no money. I don't see why they wouldn't make no money as much furniture as we was putting out of that place.
Uh-huh.
So they shut it down, sold all the machines, with sewing machines, routers and stuff, sold for hundreds of thousands of dollars. Computerized.